Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to learn a lot about how to live a longer and healthier life, something we all deserve. This is not about politics. I don't deal with politics. I'm apolitical. I just look for the truth wherever it's at. I'm not a part of any oppositional issues. I believe that all people are sacred until they choose not to be, and then delve into the dark side of their conditioned mind and do some very foolish and dangerous things. But that is not the majority. The vast majority of people that I have met have been decent, ethical, kind, empathetic, and caring. You wouldn't know that today. So many people are ill. How'd that happen? How do we become a nation that is the most obese in the world per population? How do we have children who are not going to live as long as their parents? How do we have it that is normal to accept that what people say on Facebook or Wikipedia is true or accurate when we know how much is controlled by special interest and the deep state behind the scenes filling us with propaganda 24/7? That's why people come here, because it's not about the money. There is none. It's not about fame. To the contrary, it is about telling the truth. That's simple. For example, today, from the University of Glasgow, which is in Scotland, this was presented at the European Congress on Obesity, and it dealt with vegetarians have a much healthier lifestyle and therefore have far less disease markers than meat eaters. And yet last night on Tucker Carlson, he had a person on promoting meat and challenging some of the problems with the meatless patties you see. And I would agree with the danger of eating genetically engineered meat. If you saw how it's actually made, wow, you think that's Frankenfood. I don't want those chemicals in my body. Why? Because there was a Dr. Baltimore, and there was a Nobel Prize given for the work done. Actually, it was a woman scientist who originated, but Baltimore was a part of that effort, called jumping genes, which meant that we had thought that whatever is in a gene stays in the gene and that nothing's going to really adversely affect that gene. Now we know that genetically modified materials can affect, frequently to the detriment of the cell, the genetic code and also the genome. So the certainty by consensus for almost 30 years is now being shattered. The CRISPR method of genetically altering genes has now been brought into question, that it's extremely flawed and dangerous. That means thousands of scientists doing hundreds of thousands of experiments over the last 30 years have been doing it with flawed technology without realizing the consequences. That's why we look for the truth. So today we're going to start by letting you know that if you're on a vegetarian diet, you're going to be a lot healthier than those who are on a meat-based diet. How many people were in this study? 166,000. That's a lot. And then we have biomarkers. Right now, we have a study. It's only 2 days from completion of this study. Again, it has not been done before. It's using real human being in a non-medical but lifestyle modification study to show, can we actually move the biomarkers in our body? That's hard objective data, not subjective. To show that by doing certain processes each day consistently and altogether, can we show our biomarkers de-age? Can we get an older biomarker to be young again? And the answer is yes. This is the fourth time we've done this study in the past 16 months, so there's more than good documentation. But how difficult is it to get the average American who eats meat to realize that just changing to a vegan, healthy, clean, ideally locally grown organic food supply is good for their health? So we now know that when you eat meat, the biomarkers promote cancer, cardiovascular and age-related diseases and other chronic conditions. You live a shorter life if you're the average person eating meat. How many Americans eat meat? 97%. In all these decades, with all the books and articles and documentaries, with all the scientific evidence, all supporting a meatless diet, all of it, we only have 3% of the people who are aware of this. How many people in 1972, when I had my big best-selling book, The Complete Handbook of Nutrition, advocating a vegan diet, 3% then, 3% today. Now, some people will have smoothies and have big salads, but even in those salads with one of the most popular restaurants in America, they still have the chicken in there. Now, they'll say that the chicken is hormone-free, for example. Okay. But these are chickens that are kept in factory farm conditions, highly stressed. Mind you, when you eat the meat, you are also consuming the high levels of stress hormones that are in that animal's body. But so they were saying last night, you know, Tucker was agreeing, oh, the meat, what's wrong with meat? There's nothing wrong with meat. Yeah, Tucker, unfortunately, your knowledge of a healthy diet is about your knowledge of global warming, about a zero. So I suggest that you look at the scientific evidence. We have thousands of studies from peer-reviewed literature showing you the proof that a meatless diet is healthy. We have also zero studies, not a single study we can find in all of PubMed showing you that you're going to be healthier, live a longer life, and prevent disease by eating meat. Not one. You're on the wrong side along with 97% of the American public. How'd you get there? Propaganda, conditioning, what you watch on television when you're younger. We're all susceptible to that, but not everybody succumbs to it. It takes a certain type of confidence in breaking free of the crowd, the consensus, and doing it right. But science is also now very orthodox and politicized and weaponized, and it also is almost always what we see presented to the public by consensus science is wrong, totally wrong. We'll deal with that on an upcoming program. So just realize, want to live a longer life? University of Glasgow did the study. So more confidence in getting rid of those fats, lowering your triglycerides, increasing the good HDL, lowering your cholesterol, increasing your vitamin D, increasing your calcium and magnesium for good bone and joint health, increasing your vitamin C to prevent infection, colds and flu, lessen the duration. Zinc, one of the most underappreciated minerals, and yet it's essential at this time to stimulate your immune system. Why do you think all the good studies show, ivermectin with vitamin C and quercetin and vitamin D? But it does. Or hydroxychloroquine with zinc. It's the zinc that drives the hydroxychloroquine into the cell that kills the COVID virus. Another study, and this is from the German Center for Neurodegenerative Diseases, Alzheimer's study. What do they say? A Mediterranean diet can protect against memory loss and dementia. Now, there's over 2,000 studies in the peer-reviewed literature on the importance of a Mediterranean-style diet. Now, that's not a vegan diet, but more and more, it emphasizes vegetables, beans. Beans are very popular all over Europe. Legumes, those are more popular in the Middle East and Africa, but it's growing like split peas and lentils, but also starchy vegetables like parsnips and turnips, sweet potatoes and yams, kohlrabi. And then you have lots of garlic, ginger, basil, oregano, dill, thyme, rosemary. And these are very common all over Western Mediterranean. I'm not talking about the Eastern Mediterranean. That's completely different. Western Mediterranean, Spain, Greece, France, and of course Italy. And so you have to understand, you can be 500 miles away and have a completely, totally separate type of diet. So they're not emphasizing the high meat anymore. More natural and organic produce. They also have fish, but the fish there is coming from a cleaner type of fish, a smaller type of fish, and the water is not as polluted. So what they're finding is when you stick to a Mediterranean diet, we're not talking about a vegan diet now, a Mediterranean diet, you're going to impact the neurons. Now, in Alzheimer's disease and in dementia, the neurons in the brain die. Largely responsible for the death of neurons are certain protein deposits in the brain, and those are called beta amyloid, A-M-Y-L-O-I-D. And they form clumps. The clumps are called plaques between neurons and tau proteins, T-A-U, which stick together inside the neurons. The causes of these deposits are yet not completely clear. In addition, a rapid progressive atrophy or shrinking of the brain volume can be observed in affected persons. Quite simply, Alzheimer's symptoms, such as memory loss, disorientation, lack of cognition, agitation, and challenging behaviors are the consequence. So what they found is when you put people on a Mediterranean-like diet with lots of fruits and lots of vegetables, lots of locally grown things, lots of the whole grain cereals, and the monounsaturated fatty acids such as olive oil and eating olives, you're actually protecting against the protein deposits in the brain and brain atrophy. So it's low in dairy, but the dairy they frequently have is a much healthier dairy than we have in the United States. It's very high in probiotics. They also eat a lot more fermented food than we do, not as much as in Bavaria, Germany, and the Southern Alps, but they have a lot less red meat and a lot less saturated fats. So when you're eating a lot of garlic and a lot of onions and shallots, and you're eating a lot of the whole grains, you're going to be a lot healthier. So this was a study that took people whose average age was around 70, and they were not in good cognitive health, and they were at high risk of Alzheimer's and memory impairment, mild cognitive impairment, that's a precursor to dementia. And I was telling a friend of mine yesterday that a member of their family has the beginning of dementia. They said, well, how do you know? I said, all the things you talk about, and they can't remember it. Where someone will repeat the same question 10 times in a 10-minute conversation without realizing they'd asked the same question 9 times before. You have to look at these precursors. And it's cumulative, and it gets worse. So now we have some positive information for everyone throughout the world. And by the way, for all of our friends, and by the way, we have a lot of friends listening, thousands upon thousands in Australia. I'll be lecturing before, I was told up to 50,000 come late September, September 27th. So I look forward to that. And they're using the articles that are written. And in fact, I'll be doing an article today and then a new article on Friday, and then also over in Ireland, in Great Britain, in India, all across the world, people take this information. That's why I also spell things out, because not everywhere is English the first language in some countries. So it makes it a little easier for them to find the information. So just remember, everything that you eat, drink, smoke, the air you breathe, it can lead to pathological levels that denature our biomarkers, especially in the cerebrospinal fluid. And when you're eating a Mediterranean diet, exercising each day and dealing with life's issues in a more mature fashion, not just emotional, you're impacting in a good way the hippocampus. By the way, the hippocampus, H-I-P-P-O, hippocampus, C-A-M-P-U-S, that's an area of the brain that is considered the control center of memory. It shrinks early and severely in dementia and Alzheimer's. But we can get that back to normal also. A lot of people are dehydrated as they get older anyhow. One other thing, the University of Southern Denmark published a study published in the Journal of Preventive Medicine, and it showed that social isolation has a profound and increasingly negative impact on physical functioning in older adults. And yet right now, because of the mismanagement of COVID, social isolation among all adults is associated with premature death. So we literally are having people die from diseases that should have been treated but weren't because they were afraid to go to hospitals, or hospitals simply didn't allow them to come in because everything was for COVID. Younger people, because of the loss of meaningfulness in life, feeling completely disoriented by everything that's changed that they have no control over. So just add those figures up. Include those into the cost of Anthony Fauci, Bill Gates, two consecutive presidents, all who've mismanaged this. So just remember the importance of incorporating strategies to reduce social isolation and promote successful aging, and being around other people who share things in common. That's a great first step. So more on that. I just want to tell you the problem, and we'll get into the solutions coming up. I'll just say one last thing. This is from Uppsala University in Sweden, published in the Journal of Public Health. Bullying in both girls and boys, when they're young, leads to obesity and lack of good mental health. Depressive symptoms are more common in teenage girls than in their male peers. However, boys' mental health appears to be affected more if they suffer from obesity, irrespective of gender. Bullying is a big negative, and yet it's epidemic now in our society. And I'll get into why we allow bullying or tolerate it. We shouldn't. So remember, if you're bullied and you're young and you don't feel you have a whole lot of ways except to try to hide from it or isolate yourself, and you live in chronic fear, and people do who go to school where gangs hang out and bully students, that's going to lead to a greater depression, which can lead to drugs and also lead to suicide or obesity. And all of that has a negative outcome. I'm Gary Nall. We're here to share insights, always from peer-reviewed literature, always from quality sources, with the hope that you'll find pieces of information that you can put together. We're going to take a break, and when we come back from the break, if my schedule is right today, we should be able to get everything in. I've got a lot to share with you. But yesterday we started to show you that there have been all along, from the beginning and before this pandemic, medicines. These are regular orthodox medicines, safe, but extremely effective. And we have, for all intents and purposes, tried to destroy them, make them impossible to get in the United States. Why? And how do we know they're really effective? Well, those who don't want you to know will point to two articles showing that they don't do any good, could do harm. Both of those articles were retracted as fraudulent. Who's behind it? We're going to show you all that. And why are they, what are they promoting in its stead? Vaccines and a useless, very expensive, and toxic drug. Who's behind that? You'll find out in a few moments, but we're going to present the testimony before Congress under oath of a highly qualified, board certified in several and two different fields, multiple public studies, nothing controversial at all in this person's background. And he's one of thousands who have come forward where orthodoxy is challenging orthodoxy. Isn't this interesting to watch this go on? Back with part two. And then from that, we're immediately going to segue into who is behind the cover-up, naming names, associations, and the proof of all these connections. We're going to do what the mainstream media could have done. It certainly has the intellectual capacity and the financial resources and the contacts to do this. They've chosen not to. We are showing you the truth today.
Was extremely effective in both preventing and treating COVID-19. Here are the findings of 9 studies on the use of ivermectin as a prophylaxis against COVID-19. In this figure, anything to the left of 1 indicates that ivermectin is more effective than the control. Here's a figure from the FLCCC showing the effect of the introduction of ivermectin on daily death rates in various states in the country of Peru. As you can see, the introduction of ivermectin resulted in an immediate and sustained decrease in COVID-19 mortality. Likewise, here's a figure showing COVID-19 case rates in the various states of Mexico. The southern state of Chiapas was the only Mexican state to widely distribute ivermectin. Note the huge reduction in COVID-19 cases and compare it to neighboring states. The paper also discusses a study conducted in Argentina where a large group of healthcare workers was given ivermectin. Of the 788 workers who were given ivermectin, none of them contracted COVID, whereas over 50% of the controls who weren't given ivermectin did contract COVID. The FLCCC paper also looked at 12 studies of the use of ivermectin to treat people who had been infected with SARS-CoV-2. All 12 studies, including 7 randomized control studies, showed that ivermectin was superior to the control. On December 8th of 2020, members of the FLCCC appeared before a Senate subcommittee on the early treatment of COVID-19, which was chaired by Senator Ron Johnson. Here's some of Dr. Corey's testimony to the committee.
Mountains of data have emerged from many centers and countries around the world showing the miraculous effectiveness of ivermectin. It basically obliterates transmission of this virus. If you take it, you will not get sick. I cannot keep caring for patients when I know that they could have been saved with earlier treatment, and that drug that will treat them and prevent the hospitalization is ivermectin. All I ask is for the NIH to review our data that we've compiled of all of the emerging data. We have almost 30 studies. Everyone is reliably and reproducibly positive, showing the dramatic impacts of ivermectin.
Now, given all the deaths and economic destruction caused by COVID-19, you would think that the government and the health agencies and the media of the United States would have welcomed this news with open arms. But that's not what happened. Instead, a coalition of powerful forces acted together to completely suppress any information on the effectiveness of ivermectin in treating and preventing COVID-19. So now, let's take a close look at who suppressed ivermectin. So now, let's take a close look at who suppressed ivermectin. The first big player to suppress ivermectin was the mainstream media. The New York Times led the way by declaring that the Senate hearing had promoted unproven drugs and dubious claims. AP followed with an astonishing claim that there's no evidence that ivermectin works against COVID-19, conveniently ignoring every single one of the studies that was listed in the FLCCC paper. The next group to suppress ivermectin was big tech. YouTube, which is owned by Google, censored a popular video by Dr. Chris Martinson on ivermectin. They did the same to Dr. Christy Reisinger.
To my shock and dismay, the previous video I published on December 22nd about ivermectin was taken down by YouTube.
Twitter went as far as blacklisting a European medical journal that published an article on treating COVID-19 with ivermectin. Facebook went even further and removed posts by the FLCCC about their paper. The next major group to suppress ivermectin was the NIH, America's National Institutes of Health. In April of 2020, the NIH formed the COVID-19 Treatment Guidelines Panel. This panel was incredibly influential because essentially they decided what treatment doctors in the United States could use to treat patients with COVID-19. Here are the panel's treatment recommendations from January 3rd, 2021, taken from their website. These were in place for most of 2020. Take a close look at the recommendations for people who are COVID positive but not yet in the hospital, or in the hospital but not yet requiring oxygen supplementation. They say that a doctor can apply for an EUA, or emergency use authorization, for a monoclonal antibody. A very troublesome process. But they recommend no other treatments. This approach to treating early COVID has been described as therapeutic nihilism by Dr. Paul Marek. Leaving aside ivermectin for the moment, this is truly shocking, especially given what we know about the efficacy of things like vitamin D in preventing COVID from progressing to more severe stages. And preventing that progression is paramount, because there's a point of no return for many patients with COVID. Once they cross it and require intubation, they often cannot be saved. So just think about this policy for a second. The NIH COVID-19 treatment panel is saying, do not treat your patients until they are so sick that they need to be put on supplemental oxygen. They only make a definitive drug recommendation for patients who have deteriorated to the point where they will not survive without supplemental oxygen. And once they are that sick, what treatment do they recommend? They recommend a drug called remdesivir. It's almost as if the treatment guidelines are designed to get the patients to the point where they can be treated with remdesivir. Let's take a closer look at remdesivir. Most people first heard of remdesivir when Dr. Anthony Fauci made the unusual move of announcing it at a White House press conference in April 2020. Fauci is the head of the NIAID, the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, which is a department of the NIH. Here's Dr. Fauci speaking about remdesivir at the White House. Listen carefully to what he says about the endpoint of the study he's referring to.
The data shows that remdesivir has a clear-cut, significant, positive effect in diminishing the time to recovery.
Note that he doesn't say anything about mortality. He talks about diminishing the time to recovery. It's essential to note that Dr. Fauci's NIAID actually paid for the study he's referring to. So basically, Dr. Fauci can hardly be called an impartial judge of that study. And just as importantly, Dr. Fauci would have been well aware of the developments with the study as it was performed. He would have been well aware of the fact that midway through the trial, the primary endpoint was changed from mortality to time to recovery. And this was obviously because the researchers were seeing that remdesivir had no significant impact on mortality. Changing endpoints midway through a study is highly unusual. And many scientific commentators raised concerns about this. And yet Dr. Fauci, knowing that remdesivir did nothing to reduce mortality in COVID-19, pressed on, touting the drug as a remarkable advance in the treatment of COVID.
But we think it's really opening the door to the fact that we now have the capability of treating, and I can guarantee you, as more people, more companies, more investigators get involved, it's going to get better and better.
Not very long after Anthony Fauci made that statement, the World Health Organization recommended against the use of remdesivir. Based on much larger studies, they said there is no evidence that remdesivir improves survival or any other metric in COVID-19. Despite that, the NIH treatment panel continued to recommend remdesivir and continues to do so today. Now, all of this begs the question, why would the NIH and Dr. Fauci continue to recommend a drug that has repeatedly been shown to have no effect on improving COVID-19 survival, and which costs over $3,100 per course, unlike ivermectin, which is nearly free? In order to answer that question, we have to look at who makes remdesivir and how they're related to the people who decide what drugs can be used to treat COVID-19. Remdesivir is made by Gilead Sciences, a pharmaceutical company located in Foster City, California. Gilead is an interesting company. From 1997 to 2001, the chairman of Gilead Sciences was Donald Rumsfeld, one of the architects of the invasion of Iraq. During the same period, one of the board members of Gilead was George Shultz, a longtime Bush family ally who was instrumental in convincing George W. Bush to run for president of the United States. In order to understand why the NIH treatment panel is so pro-remdesivir, it's essential to understand the financial ties between Gilead Sciences and members of that treatment panel. If you look at the treatment panel's financial disclosures, you will see that no fewer than 7 members disclose financial support from Gilead Sciences. Interestingly, the 3 co-chairs who select the other members of the panel do not disclose support from Gilead. However, 2 of the chairs, Roy Gulick and Henry Masor, both receive financial support from Gilead. Even more interestingly, the 3rd co-chair, Clifford Lane, was actually one of the authors of the NIAID study on remdesivir, but you won't see his name in the list of the article's authors. You have to look in the financial disclosure form that accompanied that article. It's also worth noting that 7 out of 12 of his co-authors on that study disclosed funding from Gilead Sciences. The significance of this cannot be overstated. 2 of the 3 chairs of the NIH COVID-19 treatment panel, the people who put the panel together, received financial support from Gilead Sciences, while the other was intimately involved in the study that attempted and failed to prove that remdesivir was an effective treatment for COVID-19. Given these professional and financial ties, is there any way we could reasonably expect them to impartially judge the best treatments for COVID-19 or choose panel members who might advocate for repurposing cheap, off-patent drugs that would completely undercut the market for one of the main products of a company with which they enjoy close financial and professional ties? It's not necessary for any of them to have said, "Let's not promote cheap drugs and promote remdesivir instead." Financial and research interests had already corrupted their decision-making processes and biases. But we should be clear. There are sins of omission and sins of commission. And there's no way that the members of the panel, at least some of them, were unaware of the research concerning ivermectin. And yet, no one chose to bring that to the fore in their meetings. Rather than recommend ivermectin, or at least recommend more studies into ivermectin, they chose to continue to push the drug remdesivir, which they knew had no discernible effect on COVID-19 survival. This is professional negligence of the worst sort, and given the disproportionate influence that America's medical agencies have on many other countries' medical agencies, it's very likely that their negligence resulted in hundreds of thousands or even millions of deaths around the world. And let us be completely clear about why they chose to suppress ivermectin and push a drug that they knew didn't work. They did it so that one pharmaceutical company with deep political connections, huge media support, and big tech backing could make obscene profits for themselves and their shareholders. Now let's imagine, just as a thought exercise, what if the NIH and Dr. Anthony Fauci had been doing their jobs? What if, sometime in the summer of 2020, they had authorized doctors across the country to use ivermectin at their discretion? It's actually not that hard to figure out what would have happened, because there is a place with a population almost the size of the United States where that's exactly what the health authorities did. The state of Uttar Pradesh in India has a population about 70% the size of the United States. In August of 2020, the Uttar Pradesh state government authorized the use of ivermectin as a prophylaxis and treatment for COVID-19. It was given to those who tested positive for COVID, as well as their primary contacts and healthcare workers. Let's look at the stats for COVID-19 mortality in Uttar Pradesh. There was a peak of mortality in the summer, but deaths dropped very quickly after that. As we get into January of 2021, we see that deaths are averaging fewer than 10 a day. And on January 19th, in a state with 230 million people, exactly no one died from COVID-19. While in the United States, a country with a much more expensive medical system, we're averaging over 3,000 deaths per day. We know who the villains are in this story.
I'm going to give you a short 3-minute clip from a scientist who went before Congress under oath and warned why we should put a moratorium on any more of these vaccines until proper research is done. This is Dr. Jansi Chun Lindsay, and Dr. Lindsay has a formidable background. She is a toxicologist. She's a molecular biologist. She's published in the peer-reviewed literature, and she is very concerned. She's saying, look, none of this did we know before the promotion of the vaccine, but now we have blood clotting concerns. We have immune escape concerns. We have fertility concerns and all these, all of the miscarriage concerns. All of this is coming out now in large numbers. Here's what she had to say, and she had presented a paper on this as well. Both are up on prn.fm and garynall.com.
Hi, my name is Dr. Jansi Chun Lindsay. I hold a doctorate in biochemistry and molecular biology from the University of Texas and have over 30 years of scientific experience, primarily in toxicology and mechanistic biology. In the mid-1990s, I aided in the development of a temporary human contraceptive vaccine, which ended up causing unintended autoimmune ovarian destruction and sterility in animal test models. Despite efforts against this and sequence analyses that did not predict this, I strongly feel that all the gene therapy vaccines must be halted immediately due to safety concerns on several fronts. First, there is credible reason to believe that the GTs will cross-react with the syncytin and reproductive proteins in sperm, ova, and placenta, and lead to impaired fertility and reproductive outcomes. Respected virologist Bill Gallagher has made excellent arguments as to why you would expect cross-reaction due to beta sheet conformation similarities between spike protein and SYN1 and 2. I have yet to see a single immunological study which disproves this, despite the fact that it would literally take the manufacturers a single day to do these syncytin ELISA studies to ascertain this. It's been over a year since the assertions were first made that this could occur. We have seen 100 pregnancy losses reported in bears as of April 9th, and there have been reports of impaired spermatogenesis and placental findings from both the natural infection, vaccinated, and syncytin knockout animal models that have similar placental pathology, implicating the syncytin-mediated role in these outcomes. Additionally, we have heard multiple reports of menses irregularities in those vaccinated. These must be investigated. We simply cannot put these GTs in our children who are at 0.002 risk for COVID mortality, it's infected, or any more of the childbearing age population without thoroughly investigating this matter, as we could potentially sterilize an entire generation. Speculation that this will not occur and a few anecdotal reports of pregnancies in the trials are not sufficient proof that this is not impacting on a population-wide scale. Secondly, all of the gene therapies are causing coagulopathies. This is not isolated to one manufacturer, and this is not isolated to one age group, as we are seeing coagulopathy deaths in healthy young adults with no secondary comorbidities. There have been 795 reports related to blood clotting disorder as of April 9th in the VAERS reporting system, 338 of these being due to thrombocytopenia. There are forward and backward mechanistic proofs for why this is happening. The natural infection is known to cause coagulopathies due to spike protein. All GTs direct the body to make the spike protein. Sang et al. In September of 2020 showed that if you infuse spike protein in the mice that have humanized ACE2 receptor on blood platelets, that you also get disseminated thrombosis. Spike protein incubated with human blood in vitro also caused blood clot development, which was resistant to fibrinolysis. The spike protein is causing thrombocytic events, which cannot be resolved through natural means. And all vaccines must be halted until they can be reformulated to guard against this adverse effect. Third, there is strong evidence for immune escape and the inoculation under pandemic pressure with these leaky vaccines.
Thank you for your comment. Your time has expired.
Wow. 3 minutes for someone who is warning a panel of our legislators of the dangers that we're now seeing, that we've warned you about, and yet everything is full steam ahead. And nothing asked in follow-up by that person. We're going to go now to yesterday in a Congress where a hearing was held, Anthony Fauci was being asked specifically about the origins. Listen carefully what he says. It's extremely important because we believe and we have the proof that we'll be presenting that Anthony Fauci very probably perjured himself yesterday. Now, had the legislators done their homework, as we've done, they could have challenged him on that perjury issue immediately, but they didn't. Here's the response from Anthony Fauci when asked about the origins of COVID, the gain-of-function research being done, being paid for by him through the National Institutes of Health and the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease, and Dr. Daszak, who was his go-to person, Anthony Fauci's go-to person. Here's that exchange.
We don't know whether the pandemic started in a lab in Wuhan or evolved naturally, but we should want to know. 3 million people have died from this pandemic, and that should cause us to explore all possibilities. Instead, government authorities, self-interested in continuing gain-of-function research, say there's nothing to see here. Gain-of-function research, as you know, is juicing up naturally occurring animal viruses to infect humans. To arrive at the truth, the U.S. government should admit that the Wuhan Virology Institute was experimenting to enhance the coronavirus's ability to infect humans. Juicing up superviruses is not new. Scientists in the U.S. have long known how to mutate animal viruses to infect humans. For years, Dr. Ralph Barrick, a virologist in the U.S., has been collaborating with Dr. Shi Zhengli of the Wuhan Virology Institute, sharing his discoveries about how to create superviruses. This gain-of-function research has been funded by the NIH. The collaboration between the U.S. and the Wuhan Virology Institute continues. Doctors Barrick and Shi worked together to insert bat virus spike protein into the backbone of the deadly SARS virus and then use this man-made supervirus to infect human airway cells. Think about that for a moment. The SARS virus had a 15% mortality. We're fighting a pandemic that has about a 1% mortality. Can you imagine if a SARS virus that's been juiced up and had viral proteins added to it, to the spike protein, if that were released accidentally? Dr. Fauci, do you still support funding of the NIH funding of the lab in Wuhan?
Senator Paul, with all due respect, you are entirely and completely incorrect that the NIH has not ever and does not now fund gain-of-function research in the Wuhan Institute
of Virology. Do they fund Dr. Barrick?
We do not fund...
Do you fund Dr. Barrick's gain-of-function research?
Dr. Barrick does not doing gain-of-function research, and if it is, it's according to the guidelines, and it is being conducted in North Carolina.
You don't think inserting a bat virus spike protein that he got from the Wuhan Institute into the SARS virus is gain of function?
That is not.
You would be in the minority because at least 200 scientists have signed a statement from the Cambridge Working Group saying that it is gain of function.
Well, it is not. And if you look at the grant and you look at the progress reports, it is not gain of function, despite the fact that people tweet that.
So do you still support sending money to the Wuhan Virology Institute?
We do not send money now to the Wuhan Virology Institute.
Do you support sending money? We did, under your tutelage. We were sending it through EcoHealth. It was a sub-agency and a sub-grant. Do you support that the money from NIH that was going to the Wuhan Institute?
Let me explain to you why that was done. The SARS-CoV-1 originated in bats in China. It would have been irresponsible of us if we did not investigate the bat viruses and the serology to see who might have been infected.
Or perhaps it would be
irresponsible
to send it to the Chinese government that we may not be able to trust with this knowledge and with this incredibly dangerous viruses. Government scientists like yourself who favor gain-of-function research...
I don't favor gain-of-function research in China. You are saying things that are not correct.
Government defenders of gain-of-function, such as yourself, say that COVID-19 mutations were random and not designed by man. But interestingly, the technique that Dr. Barrick developed forces mutations by serial passage through cell culture that the mutations appear to be natural. In fact, Dr. Barrick named the technique the no-see-um technique because the mutations appear naturally. Nicholas Baker in the New York Magazine said nobody would know if the virus had been fabricated in a laboratory or grown in nature. Government authorities in the U.S., including yourself, unequivocally deny that COVID-19 could have escaped a lab. But even Dr. Xi in Wuhan wasn't so sure. According to Nicholas Baker, Dr. Xi wondered, could this new virus have come from her own laboratory? She checked her records frantically and found no matches. That really took a load off my mind, she said. I had not slept for days. The director of the gain-of-function research in Wuhan couldn't sleep because she was terrified that it might be in her lab. Dr. Barrick, an advocate of gain-of-function research, admits the main problem that the Institute of Virology has is the outbreak occurred in close proximity. What are the odds? Barrick responded, could you rule out a laboratory escape? The answer in this case is probably not. Will you, in front of this group, categorically say that the COVID-19 could not have occurred through serial passage in a laboratory?
I do not have any accounting of what the Chinese may have done, and I'm fully in favor of any further investigation of what went on in China. However, I will repeat again, the NIH and NIAID categorically has not funded gain-of-function research to be conducted in the Wuhan Institute.
Okay, there you had from Anthony Fauci under oath. Richard Gale is on the line now. Richard, how would you respond to Anthony Fauci, and what evidence, hard evidence, do you have that could be used as a challenge to what he just said?
Hey, good afternoon, Gary, and all our listeners. So, we can go back. I think the most important thing, and surprisingly, Ron Paul did not make reference to the Nature article that was published in 2015, and that has been one of the stalwart articles showing and stating that the gain-of-function research was going on at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. And in that paper, remember, we're going back to 2015 here, that it stated that the latest study was already underway before the U.S. moratorium began, and that was from Obama, and that the NIH allowed that research to go to proceed while it was under review by the agency. And this was stated, now this was stated directly by Ralph Barrett, who both Paul and Fauci were making reference to, who was the infectious disease researcher at University of North Carolina. He was the co-author of a study showing, so there was the study that was actually published on gain of function research coming out of the University of North Carolina. But then the NIH concluded their conclusion, which is not to be expected, unexpected, that the work was not risky enough as to fall under the moratorium, despite Obama placing that moratorium. Therefore, the research then was shifted over to Wuhan, and this Dr. Xi, the Chinese, the woman who's known as the Batwoman, was at the University of North Carolina and a colleague of ours doing this research. So this money, however, and let's be clear, it was $3.7 million that was funneled over to Peter Daszak's Echo Health Alliance. And that was NIH money, but it also, I don't know the breakdown of that, because it was also money from Bill Gates Foundation as well. So Bill Gates is also involved in this story. Very early on, I mean, before the outbreak and before the first case was ever reported in Wuhan, I believe that was, what, December 30th, 2019, or 31st, Daszak appeared, it was at a pandemic conference, animal pandemic conference held in Singapore. And during that conference, Daszak himself, in the interview, and you can find this video, it's gone rather viral on the internet, but he he stated exactly what they were doing in Wuhan, and his work in providing the coronavirus, the different coronaviruses that might be able to be engineered in order to create a coronavirus strain that would be that could pass from animal to human. Okay, and this is reverse engineering. The problem is the RNA is you can't really manipulate RNA very well. You have to do a reverse engineering. You have to take the RNA. You have to, through the CRISPR, you can insert the RNA into the DNA, and that's why this CRISPR technology is so dangerous, because then you can manipulate the DNA and then reverse engineer it into the RNA, and that's what's being used in the Moderna and Pfizer vaccines. I think the more telling thing, I think, is also recently Gary Ruskin, who was recently on the broadcast from U.S. Right to Know, managed to get through public records some emails that were being distributed concerning this research being done in Wuhan, and it states very clearly in the contract. So this is the contract for the money going from the NIH to EcoHealth Alliance, and it states that they're going to be creating these predictive models of the potential emergence to experimentally use reverse engineering, pseudoviruses and receptor binding assays and virus infection experiments across a range of cells from different species and humanized mice. And what they're used doing is, quote, we will be using this S protein, that's the spike protein, sequence data, infectious clone technology in vitro and in vivo to, in infection experiments and analyze the receptor binding, test the hypothesis that they can create a spillover. In other words, a spillover, in other words, how contagious it is, whether to actually manipulate the coronavirus to a point that it could spread from one organism to another. So in kind of non-technical language, what this is really stating is that this Dr. Xi at the Wuhan lab was assigned to create novel coronaviruses with the highest possible infectivity for human cells. And her plan basically was to take genes that were coded for these spike proteins that could, possessing a variety of different affinities towards human cells. And she would then insert these spike genes one by one into this backbone of the virus's genome, which is what Ron Paul was referring to. And this is done through this reverse genetics and infectious clone technology, and thereby creating a series of chimeric viruses. And Dasnik himself had also stated on record that they'd done this for about five or six coronaviruses during that Singapore conference. Then these chimeric viruses that you create in a lab could then be tested for their ability to attack human cell cultures. So one would be in vitro.
That's the gain of function research, but clearly you have evidence. You've presented evidence, and we will post that video tomorrow. We'll play it tomorrow of Dasnik stating exactly this. I've seen the video 10 times. So I believe that anyone in this audience should take the information from today's program and take this clip where Richard is on and send it over to the congressperson, Senator Rand Paul, and ask him to recall Anthony Fauci and present the documentation of how the money went from the National Institutes of Health or Anthony Fauci's National Institutes of Allergy and Infectious Disease and went to the to his Dasnik, a nonprofit that has been behind all this, to the University of North Carolina, and from there then over to the Wuhan lab. So when he said unequivocally, absolutely, you've never done it, not going to do it, well, we believe that there's a good opportunity to challenge him with perjury. Would you agree or disagree with that,
Oh, I completely agree. And I think that Daszak is also very much involved in the cover-up based on the very early Lancet article that he was an author of, along with Christian Dawson and a whole slew of other people that wrote this this article to kind of state that, can't remember the actual title of the article, but to clearly make the statement that this had a natural origin. But then the emails that, that were received through public record show and indicate that Daszak himself was, there's a statement. Statement one of the emails. He said, "We cannot let conspiring theorists say COVID-R doesn't have a natural origin." And one of the co-authors of that paper, who were mostly all associated with Echo Alliance, in some capacity, whether as funders and also with the Bill Gates Foundation, a gentleman who was helping to fund the Echo Alliance group through the Gates Foundation, when they questioned, well, shouldn't we maybe add a little, some kind of, scientific reference in here to give it credibility? And he categorically denied that they should do that, that we should just make this as an official statement.
Good. We will continue and pick up on this tomorrow. Thank you much, Richard Gale. So there you have it. We've done the research that members of Congress and their committees, the U.S. government, and the media have not done. Share it with everyone before it's taken off the air. And finally, before we go, just something on a completely different note. I was just informed this morning that we have just received my newest invention. It's a year in the making, but it's finally here. What time? Perfect. Is called the Instant Veggie Broth, dairy-free vegan. And the ingredients, well, I gave a nice selection of organic ingredients, tapioca and tomatoes and cabbage and black pepper and garlic and carrots and onions and Himalayan sea salt. It's got wonderful ingredients. It took us a long time of testing and testing and testing till it got perfection, and from the feedback group, it's now available. It's about $1.90 per serving, and you get 20 servings, so it's not expensive. So something brand new, and it's for you. So today where I'm at, it's a little chilly and overcast, and this would be perfect. I don't have any, but you can. It'll be shipped out today. It's a whole, it's 20 servings of veggie broth, but my own creation, and I think you'll really enjoy it. So this is just the right pick-me-upper and great tasting and very satisfying to have. You can take it anywhere with you, too. So give a call to this number if you'd like the brand-new product just offered for the first time today, and you'll see all the ingredients, and most of those are organic, and you can enjoy it, all right? That's what it's for. Call 877-627-5065. That's 877-627-5065. Or you can call Neil in the Vitamin Closet at 646-926-5430, 646-926-5430. Or you can visit Neil Monday through Saturday from noon to 8. So brand new, something really healthy and absolutely delicious tasting that will just hit the spot when you want something that's nice and warm, and it's easy to make, very quick. All right? So it's the new veggie broth. Thank you all for listening and have a nice day.